Welcome to episode 82 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tema Frank. I gotta say, it is great to be back at the podcast after a break of a couple of weeks. As regular listeners know, I missed the past 2 weeks because one of our best friends was hit by a truck while he was crossing a street in a crosswalk with a green light. He and his wife had just moved to Texas from Canada and were walking to dinner, and she's left with the horrific memory of feeling his hand pulled out of hers as he got hit. It's just an awful, awful thing. So I went down to help his wife get through the first couple of weeks, and I'm sad to report that my dear friend is still in a coma. It's kind of a gloomy way to start today's show. Life can change in an instant, and today's podcast guest actually is one who also faced a family tragedy and had to step in to fill her husband's shoes. Since then, Marie Soprovich, owner of Aquarian Renovations, has taken the business to new heights, though. Using the 3P profit formula that I advocate in my book, People Shock, The Path to Profits When Customers Rule. Speaking of the book, for one day only, on Wednesday, August 24th, 2016, I'm making the Kindle version of the book available on Amazon for only $1.99. So if today is Wednesday, August 24th, go catch that offer right away. If you missed it, I'm sorry to hear that. But People Shock is still worth getting and reading. Obviously, I think so, but so do the reviewers. And thank you, by the way, to the most recent reviewer, Jeannie Walters, who's kept our 5-star ratings streak going strong. If you have bought the book and have had a chance to look at it, it would be awesome if you too would go and place a rating for the book and a review on Amazon. Chat with you briefly at the end of the interview.
My name is Marie Soprovich, and I am the CEO and owner of Aquarian Renovations, and we are a design build construction company, and I kind of orchestrate the orchestra to ensure that everybody's doing what they need to do in order for us to deliver a great product for our clients. And
so who are your clients? What sorts of, it's all residential?
Primarily it's residential. We've done a little bit of commercial, and we do a little bit of new construction as well. Our clients, primarily, our biggest portion of them are medical doctors. Seems like they're very attracted to the work that we do, and the fact that we just take care of business from the beginning to the end, and there's a sense of trust that's been built amongst that community.
Right.
So a lot of our clients are from that background of medical.
And is that because the referrals kind of build?
I think that probably has a big part of that. It's this fairly close community, I think, of medical people in the Edmonton area. And they talk, and they socialize amongst each other, and they've seen each other's renovations. So that certainly is a big part of our network.
Okay.
Certainly not only that.
Okay, so Marie, you did not start in this line of work. Can you just fill us in a bit on your trajectory and how you ended up doing what you're doing now?
Sure. So I have a background in education. My first degree is from the University of Regina, and the around 1980, a long time ago already. So I was very involved in education as a teacher, and then as eventually a school administrator. I was vice principal at a school. And in the early 90s, I met my husband, who does have a very extensive construction background, and his family are family of builders and land developers, and would have changed the face of the Edmonton skyline. And when Doug and I got together, we started a company. We always had a building or two on the side, of whether it's a renovation or a new home construction, and I was teaching. So I was able to pay the bills while he would build our own little company. And it went from a very art-focused focus on awareness of the planet and peace and goodwill and art and all of those things kind of coming together in the work that he wanted to do, which is really art-based. Mm-hmm. And then eventually moved from that sort of creating art to renovations, which became the new art that we do.
And what brought about that switch?
Mostly, I think it was the economy. We were making fountains, and we had earth lights and peace candles, and we did t-shirts, and we did all kinds of really cool things. But then life just moved forward, and the market got quite flooded with fountains coming in from overseas,
yes.
And there were things that we just couldn't compete with that. Mm-hmm. So we shut that part of the business down and just truly went into renovations. And those built by word of mouth, because people saw the work that we were doing, you know, buying homes and renovating them and selling them again. And people started paying us to do their homes, so we didn't have to purchase as many pieces of property ourselves,
right.
And could just do the renovations. So we became very involved in that, and very involved with the Canadian Home Builders from the, you know, the early 2000 on, and won a lot of awards very quickly, and so got quite a bit of recognition in the community for the quality of work, mm-hmm. and the character of the company. So that really grew, and as we moved forward, that was the trajectory, is to really build a very solid renovation company primarily. And about 5 years ago, my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer.
Oh, dear.
And we had some hard decisions to make about what do we do with the company, what do we do with what time we have left together, how do we support our son, what do we do. So what I did was immediately take a leave of absence from my work, mm-hmm. and support him in his journey.
Yeah.
And after he passed away, I had come to the realization that it was really important to move forward with the company, and that there are many, many good teachers and leaders out there in the education world. So I would be less missed there than I would be if I were to let the company go. So I knew that I would have a huge learning curve ahead of me.
Yeah. So how involved had you been? Like, what aspects of the business had you been involved with before that?
In the evenings, we talk a lot about the human resources, the people, our clients, the different kinds of jobs. In the beginning, I would go out with him and we'd do our own demo, and I'd help with different things and writing letters and that kind of work. But as the company grew, we hired for that. So I really had become less involved in the hands-on,
mm-hmm.
but we were always strategic about the plans for who we hired and what kinds of company culture we were developing, our vision and philosophy of who we were as a company, and really that was solid. So I understood that.
So tell me more about that. You're saying right from the beginning you were, mm-hmm. very focused on that. Can you elaborate? What made that important to you right at the beginning?
Well, our whole focus even for the company was more about the development of human potential and the creation of something beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle, whether it was creating candle holders or earth lights or water fountains or building beautiful structures, was purely the vehicle.
Right.
So it was about the people, and it was about the clients that we worked with, and about the people that we employed, and about ourselves too, about really being our best, and finding that place and working from that point. And it's still that today. I'm very, very proud of the company culture that we have, and the team that we've pulled together. Been there for a long time, most of them.
How many people do you have?
Right at the moment, we have 21.
Okay.
So, you know, people's lives change. Some people come and go, but for the most part, the core of the company has been consistent, and that is fantastic. We have great people who believe in the vision and the culture of Aquarian, and love working with our clients and create kind of magic. It's a fun place to work.
How many people did you have at the time of your husband's illness?
Probably about the same, 20 to okay. 25, depending on what season it was. Sometimes we have some summer workers, but the 20 to 25 we've had for quite a few years now. So we've managed to maintain that, and I think improve our production because we're so much better at what we do now.
Right.
Our systems are really solid, and we've got clear descriptions of who does what, and we're better at what we know.
When did you start really documenting systems?
Doug had started that quite a while ago. Let's see, this is 2016. So I'm sure a good 10 to 15 years ago, he would have started on that. Mm-hmm. But the systems were still evolving, and they needed to be looked at when I took over. That was sort of one of the first things. It's like, okay, how much do we need to sell every month in order to meet our, just the break-even point?
Right.
What are those numbers that we need? How do we do that? Or what do we need to become more effective doing? Certainly, we looked at our whole design part of it, and we realized that we needed to put a system together to really compensate for the work that was being done in the office before we even went to the construction contract. So we now have two contracts in place, one for the design build work, mm-hmm. the design full estimate work, and right. then another contract for the actual construction piece of it. And that really made a huge difference. It values the work.
So people actually pay to have a proposal put together?
To have the blueprints and the design okay. work and the full cost estimate.
Yeah. Okay, that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah. So we do a very thorough job, and everything's picked beforehand. So there's really clear to the client exactly what they're going to get for what they're paying for.
Right. So what intrigues me about what you're saying is, you know, I talk in People Shock about what I call the three P's, and you've really got all of them. So you understand the promise, you've got a clear vision of what you're doing and why you're doing it and what your mission is. Mm-hmm. The people is clearly very important to you, both your staff and your customers, and presumably supplier relationships and all Absolutely. Those things too, and then process. So you've really touched on all of them. Which probably has a lot to do with why the company is succeeding as it is. I'm kind of curious a little bit about, and I know this isn't strictly customer experience related, but it would have spin-off effects, is mm-hmm. how did people handle things emotionally when you mm-hmm. took over? Mm-hmm. Because you, first of all, would have been at a very difficult emotional time yourself, mm-hmm. and then your staff had also... You know, they're struggling with the loss of their leader, and did they have trouble accepting you? How did that work out?
Well, it was the hardest challenge, the biggest challenge of my lifetime, I am sure.
Mm-hmm.
So Doug was a very loved leader, mm-hmm. absolutely, by clients, staff, everyone. And the staff certainly knew me, and they see me around at different events, and not always during the day.
Yeah.
So there was a get to know time mm-hmm. after, and for me a little bit of just shock of what's really happened here, and now I'm sitting in the captain's chair and I need to figure out who my people are, and yeah. they need to figure out who I am. And I started by thinking about what are my strengths and what can I bring okay. to this team now mm-hmm. as I learn and try to understand what's actually going on here. So I had the picture of what's going on here, but I needed to go really deep. So I started by actually writing articles, because as a teacher in a language arts and English background, I had started writing articles actually when Doug was still sick, because I could sit beside him on the bed and write for magazines about what projects we'd worked on or what our
Brilliant.
Process looked like.
Great marketing.
it has been great. And I still write now on a regular basis for the Home Decor and Renovation magazine.
Right.
It's become a vehicle for not just our renovation company, but for other really good renovation companies in Edmonton to really showcase their work. Mm-hmm. So I started writing articles, and it gave me the opportunity to talk to clients about what their experience was of the company and what their expectations were and
Smart.
How it happened and who worked on their site and, you know, their whole process experience. So I learned so much from that. It gave the clients an opportunity to talk about, from their point of view, what really worked. If there were areas that needed improvement, I would find that out. But it was actually very, very positive. And then my staff would see, wow, look at those pictures. I worked on that job. I know who they are. And when you see it in print mm-hmm. and you've got these beautiful glossy pictures to go with it, there was just something that mm-hmm. created some magic. So that was powerful and still is to this day. It's a great way for me to get to know what works and what's where we really made a difference. And
that is so brilliant. I love that because it gives you this great excuse for the conversation
with everybody. So it evolved in that regard. And I also had some really good financial help from my brother-in-law, who has also owned a new home construction company, and he's really good with numbers. So he came in and helped me to really understand what the numbers were, where we needed to make improvements, what we need to target at. He helped me learn how to do the budget, which I still get a little help with, but totally understand business from the point of view of numbers and profitability and all kinds of things. So we had to get that back in shape. There were some people who left the company because they just thought they could do it better and different themselves, which is fine. That's how that goes. I looked around after I looked at, okay, what are my strengths? I started to look around and say, okay, what are your strengths?
Right.
And what are your strengths? And where do we need to move people on the bus? So there were some tense times about getting people to consider doing something differently or taking a different position and moving people around. But
so how did you approach that?
Mostly by direct conversation and just putting it out there. This is what I need from you. Asking and trying to clarify as best I could what the need was, what I see as a strength, and why I think this is the right next step to take. So there were some tense conversations, but we have found our stride. A few people we had to pull in from the field to take over roles in the estimating, and we had to hire a few. So there was a little bit of jockeying for position, but our whole philosophy too has been build from the inside. So fellows who have been carpenters out in the field for a very long time found their way to move into lead carpenters, site superintendents, estimators, chief estimators, pulled in from that way. So we really work to create, and we try to hire young guys who are really keen on carpentry. So we'll bring them in, train them, send them to Nate. We'll pay for that. We'll hold their spots. We've got a great medical plan, like all those kinds of things to support our guys and gals in the company so that we can all be healthy and enjoy our work and do a good job and be happy.
Wow. So how do you, when you are hiring new staff, how do you go about screening them to make sure they are the right kind of fit for what you want?
Well, we would cast the net out for resumes and look through resumes and then do interview. And I think a lot of who people are show up. They show up usually in an interview. I don't usually do that by myself. I have staff from the fields where they would be working be part of that, and then we have a conversation about that. I would do my due diligence and make some phone calls and hire. I've found that if people don't fit with a culture, they have a way of taking themselves out of the game.
Right.
If it just doesn't work, then it's a clear this isn't working conversation. And I've had to have those conversations. They're part of my role.
Yeah.
And so it needs to get done. And it's not about so much the person. If it's not a good fit, it doesn't serve them either. So they would grow more effectively in a different job somewhere else, then it's important to communicate that and let them go.
Yeah. And as a friend of mine says, bless and release.
Bless and release. Yes. And try to do that as gently as possible. And to have really done our best to give the opportunity for that person to show up. So those are important things because one of our core philosophy reasons for the business is that development of human potential. It's beautiful to see. Of all the things, it's the most rewarding when people really shine at their work and they love what they're doing and they're taking more risks and they're willing to just be more than they were before. It's great.
For sure.
Yeah. Love that.
When we met the other day, as I recall, you were talking about having automated or developed systems that make it possible for you to do things more efficiently, make it possible for customers to log in and see what's going on without having to nag you all the time. How does that work, and how did you come to that kind of conclusion that you needed that?
Okay, so one of the programs we use is called Builder Trend, and it's a program that Doug would have sought out. He often spent time looking and learning, and very much into looking and learning about what do effective and efficient companies do.
Yep.
And can we learn from that? Can we take that and get that going? So he had lots of good coaching and good business strategy planning done mm-hmm. in the past 10 years or more. And that was one program that made a huge difference. So it's an online program. I think lots of builders use it. It's a place where we log in and keep track of our clients and their work schedule. All of our subtrades can log in. They can see when we've scheduled them in. Our carpenters know what's happening on different times, and the clients can watch and see. So they'll know if the plumber's to show up on Tuesday at 10 o'clock. They can see it on Builder Trend, and they can communicate back and forth to us or to the subtrade or to whomever is linked in on their part. We also keep track of pictures if they're far away. Lots of people go away. They go to Hawaii and
sure.
And you just want to look and see so they can
make
go
sure
online.
Something's progressing.
I see pictures. I see, you know, good stuff going on. So it's good that way. Their contracts are on there. Their payment schedules, everything is logged in there. So the information is right at their fingertips. So yeah. That one has been a huge help. And then of course there's other things like emails and texting and phone calls and that, and putting one person in charge of their job. They have a key contact, which is really important. So they don't need to call all the people. There's one person,
nice.
Their site superintendent, once it's in construction, he would be the person that would be their go-to, and that communication would go through them. If they needed to go back to something that was in the design phase, there's one person in the office that would be their key contact. And those people work real tight together. We have meetings once a week to talk about job progress, and all of the notes are shared with the entire staff. So if one of the carpenters is going to a different job site this week, he would have all the notes of what's gone on there and what's expected to be done. So communication is absolutely key. Okay. And some clients want more than others. We've had clients where we meet them once a week on Friday morning, going through and talking about everything that's been done that week, what's going to be done the following week. Other clients, it's like, call me when it's done.
Right. Okay.
So we get to know who they are and what they want. And that's that's an important communication part. So relationships, essential. Communication, essential.
Right. So you're in an industry where people are forever complaining about projects running behind schedule, over budget, being poorly done. How much of the work, and you talked about the subtrades, how much is directly within your control versus people that you're subcontracting to?
I'd like to believe that it's almost 100% in our control, other than if we find something that we didn't know was there.
Okay.
So we do so much pre-planning that when we get started on a job, we are pretty good with scheduling out the timeline of how long this is going to take and when we can expect the job to be finished.
Mm-hmm.
Now, things still happen. So sometimes there's change orders. People decide they want to add something else in, or a product is not to their liking, or there's something that's been ordered incorrectly, and there are things that can happen. So again, it could be important to have that communication of how we're going to fix that, or what needs to be done to make that right. We schedule our subtrades in. Sometimes stuff happens for them too, that they can't get there when they say they are. We don't really like that when that happens. And if it becomes like a chronic problem, we'd probably look for different subtrades to do certain kinds of things. But we really work to have control of that, because that's the whole idea behind design build, is that we are the contractor from the beginning to the end, and 3 years after into warranty, that we will make sure that everything is done right. So even when subcontractors' warranty runs out, we will make sure that if there's a problem, it gets fixed. And we have some pretty faithful subtrades and some subcontractors. They're good. They become part of the team in lots and lots of ways.
How does that work? How do you make them feel part of the team?
Well, We have good communication with them. There's a sense of loyalty, and we've worked with them enough that they can, they like to work with us, and we like to work with them. So there's a sense of trust. Mm-hmm. And when we ask for something, they deliver what they say they're going to deliver, and so do we. We pay our bills on time. We
make
sure that everything is, yeah, everything is done well. And we have had some trades that we no longer work with because they just don't hold that same company culture and the values of who we are, because they also represent Aquarian when they're in customers' home.
Yep. Are there any customers from hell stories that you've had?
Oh, we've really tried to
screen them out. Like,
that's absolutely it from the get-go. It needs to be a right fit. We have given money back on to people who've signed design contracts, and we just, the chemistry is not there, and, and we just know this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So we have given back deposits, and that's better. If that really is the way it's going to be, then it's better that they find a contractor that might work better for them. But generally, we really work to have them like us as much when we're all said and done, or more than when we got started.
Right.
So we work hard to build that sense of trust. And yet, we've had difficult clients. I can't imagine any contractor who hasn't. It's the nature of how it goes. But truly, most of our clients are absolutely a delight to work with. And they are surprised and in a bit of awe about how much fun they had.
Really? Now, that you don't hear a lot with home renovations.
I have testimonials. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. That they're just, it's like, when can we do that again? That was so fun.
Wow.
Yeah, it's true.
How did you get the customers before you had the reputation?
You know, I think they kind of, it kind of came hand in hand because of the nature of who we are and what we're doing. And truly, Doug was absolutely an amazing man who had been building for a long time, even before we got married. He had been a builder before, and his work is just so impeccable.
Okay.
And his nature so trustworthy. And if work needed to be done, he'd just work harder. Like, that's how he did it. So there are people, clients that we have now that still talk about him with such great fondness, and they found their next best favorite in the company to come and talk with them or to fix things. So lots of repeat clients that do things. So I think it was really quite organic. It grew from the character into the art. Yeah, it's kind of neat.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it's a special time. I feel very fortunate to have the ability and the support and the people around me to step in and carry on. It's been a big deal.
So what's the hardest part of running that business for you now?
The fact that I am alone.
Okay.
That my husband's not there.
Yeah.
He would love what's going on right now. It would be, we often say Doug would be so proud.
Yeah.
That is the hardest part. Truly. Mm-hmm. It is.
Three things really struck me from Marie's story. One is that when she stepped in to take the helm of the organization, she used what she knew was her strength, in her case it was writing and communication skills, to help the company keep moving forward while she was getting to know the business and getting to know the strengths of the people inside it. She also followed the advice of Peter Drucker in his wonderful little book, The Effective Executive, which is to build on people's strengths rather than focusing on trying to improve their weaknesses. If their weaknesses are so bad that you have to ease them out of the organization, sometimes that will happen, but don't knock yourself out trying to get them to overcome them. Instead, get them into positions that really leverage their strengths. Second thing was her clever use of the articles in third-party magazines as a non-threatening excuse to meet with customers right away and to learn from them what the company was doing right and what it could be doing better. Like, what a great reason to go out there and talk to the customers before she really knew what was fully going on herself. If you walk into a new leadership role, start by getting to know the people both inside and outside your organization, because ultimately Those people, not just you, will determine whether you succeed or fail. Third was her use of process improvement with the help of technology and documenting those processes so that the company could serve customers better, have better relationships with its suppliers and tradespeople, make things more efficient for office staff and therefore lower costs, and a result of all that, be able to grow and prosper without having to keep on adding more and more staff. Overall, I think this was a great example of a company that was really following what I call the three P's of profit, of promise, people, and process. Before I go, just a quick reminder of the special offer on Wednesday, August 24th, to buy a digital copy of PeopleShock on Amazon for only $1.99. This is a one-day offer only as we prepare for the official book launch in early September. And if you are going to be in Edmonton on September 7th, please do come to Latitude 53 between 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. for the official book launch party. I would love to see you there. That's all for today. Have a wonderful week. Bye.